This is Sheffield Live.
We're open for business live.
Good morning. It's just after 9 o'clock. It's Friday. It's the 3rd of November 2017. I'm Jamie Veitch. I'm your host for the next hour for Sheffield Live's business and social enterprise programme, Business Live. And we're broadcasting live 93.2 FM and through our internet live stream. However you're listening, you can also catch up with the programme afterwards on the podcast section of the Sheffield Live website. And talking about podcasts, did you hear last week's show? If not, panic not, because you can catch up with the podcast from sheffieldlive.org. Look up radio shows, find Business Live, and the show from the 27th of October is there. What did we discuss? Well, we had Nick Temple. He is the Deputy Chief Exec of Social Enterprise UK. He was on the phone talking about procurement, how social enterprises can win public sector contracts, and the Social Value Act, which came into law in 2013. Now, Nick himself has recently been appointed to be the new chief executive of the social investment business. He starts that role in January. He knows all about social investment, and there's been £380 million of it into social enterprises. So tune in if you missed last week's programme. Also on the show was Mo Alley. He runs the social enterprise AidWorks. That helps people working in international aid with NGOs all over the world. He's just done a big piece of work with the RNLI, and you probably know all about the RNLI. I thought I did, and their lifeboats. But did you know they run other programs worldwide too? No, I bet you didn't. But you can find out more by listening to last week's podcast. We also had workplace skills expert on the programme, Jane, who talked about how to improve the skills in your workplace and looking at being proactive rather than reactive when it comes to staff management. That was Jane Weston. She was really, really interesting too, and she'd recently taken the step to set up her business. So that was last week's show. What about today? Good question. Well, I am joined in the studio by some legal experts, and I'm really pleased to welcome into the program today Stacey Pocock. She's here with Ben Ironmonger of Ironmonger Curtis, and they're going to be talking with us in a moment or two. We're going to be talking about getting paid on time, how to ensure you actually do, and what to do if you're not being paid on time, and protecting your intellectual property. So stay tuned. Lots on that in a moment or two. But what's been going on in business and in social enterprise this week? What have you been up to? Don't forget, you can get in touch and tell us. But I noticed that the State of Small Business report was recently published, and that is all about putting SMEs on the map. And the State of Small Business report, available online in full, and I'll tweet the links out, has been published by Sage and Nesta, government's innovation I couldn't say department, because it's independent of government, but Sage and Nesta have published the State of Small Business. They found that 29% more SMEs are trading than before the financial crisis. They found that small and medium-sized enterprises have created 73% of the new net new jobs created since the recession. And they found that firms in the most productive parts of the UK are 26 times, a staggering 26 times more productive than those in the least productive part of the UK. So fairly astounding, fairly staggering results there. Well worth a read in full, actually, to take a look at. So do that. What else has been going on in business and social enterprise? Well, apparently half of staff have witnessed unethical behaviour at work, according to a charity called A Blueprint for Better Business. Now, they've surveyed 1,000 UK professionals, so this is based on the people that they've surveyed. But 55% of them said that they've either witnessed or been asked to do something unethical at work. And in the survey, 2% of people said they would definitely refuse to take part in something that made them feel uncomfortable at work, but almost half said that they would voice their concerns but would go ahead with the activity regardless. So really interesting and somewhat alarming results from that survey there. And the organisation concerned, A Blueprint for Better Business, said that a lack of ethical awareness in the office is also taking a toll on staff retention. They found that a third of people said they're tempted to change jobs because of behaviours and actions that they've witnessed in the workplace. And more than 10% said they had actually left a role for that reason. Now, is that something that you've seen yourself in your workplace? We're always interested in hearing from you. You can get in touch with me. You can email jamie@sheffieldlive.org. You can send a text to 07904 272 200. You can find me, Jamie Veitch, on Twitter. You can find Sheffield Live on Twitter as well. And whether you're starting, whether you're running a business or a social enterprise, whether you're an employer, whether you're an employee, we're always keen to hear from you. Now, before we turn to our guests, one other quick announcement. The Information Commissioner's Office, they are launching a new dedicated advice line. In fact, it's gone live this week on Wednesday to help small organisations to prepare for a new data protection law. And yes, you've heard all about it, the GDPR. But the Information Commissioner's Office themselves has said that there is a lot of scaremongering and misinformation being put out about GDPR. And so they've launched their phone service aimed at people running small businesses and charities to because it recognises the particular problems that they face getting ready for the new law. GDPR will come into force on the 25th of May next year. GDPR will be regulated by the Information Commissioner's Office. It strengthens the rules around personal data. It requires organisations to be more accountable and transparent. And there are already plenty of resources on the ICO's website, ico.org.uk, to help people employing less than 250 people to prepare for GDPR. The new helpline offers additional and personal advice. And if you want to access it, you can phone the helpline on 03 03 123 1113, and get in touch if you feel you need to know more. So what else is going on? Next week, it's the MADE Festival. The Entrepreneurship Festival returns to Sheffield once again. Are you going along to that? I will be there. Be interesting to meet you. So get in touch. Tell me if you're going along. And plenty of other things coming up. But I think it's time that we turned to our guests today. And I'm really pleased to welcome Ben and Stacey from Ironmonger Curtis into the studio. Ben, Stacey, good morning.
Good morning, Jamie.
Thanks so much for coming in today. How are you?
Good, thank you.
Yeah, very good. Friday morning.
It's always
morning.
Nice to do something different on a Friday morning, isn't it?
Absolutely, certainly is. So so I've invited you in to talk about some specialist areas. And your firm, of course, is also involved in the events programme, the Sheffield City Region Business Support Programme has offered, which we've often talked about those events on this programme. But I thought it'd be really good for listeners to really kind of borrow your brains, if you like, for half an hour and find out a bit more about some difficulties that people often have. So, Stacey, you are an expert in debt recovery, but also, if you like, in helping businesses be in a position where they're not actually having to recover their debt, so do things properly. And loads of small businesses listening to this will have been in a situation where they haven't been paid on time. So I'd like to ask you about what people can do in terms of protecting themselves, what to do if it all goes wrong. And we're going to turn to that in a moment, okay. Too. I just wanted to trail that's coming up. Ben, you're here to talk about protecting your intellectual property, if you like, and brand and so on. And for loads of small businesses and even micro enterprises of sort of up to 10 employees, people might think, well, I'd like to do that, but I quite simply can't, because surely it's really, really expensive to, I don't know, get a patent or get a trademark. And actually, people don't fully understand this. So what do small businesses need to think about that they could actually protect in terms of intellectual property? Where do we start?
It's a good question. I think the first thing to say is that intellectual property applies to every business. There is an element of intellectual property with every business that's out there at the moment. Whether it's trademarks for the logos and the trade names of the business, or whether it's the designs of the products that are sold and how they look, or whether it's copyright to do with things that have been written or filmed or recorded, like radio shows, for businesses, or whether it's patents and patents inventors, whether it's a small entrepreneur sat in his bedroom making high-tech bits and bobs, or whether it's a larger manufacturing company that makes quite technical hardware that is going to be sold all around the world. There's elements of IP that are relevant to every single business, even law firms like ourselves.
Yes, quite.
And in terms of how you protect those, it very much depends on which bit you're looking to protect. We could start with trade names.
Yes, let's start with, say, a trade name and trade logos as well. But the name to begin with.
Yeah, I mean, both of those are generally covered by trademark law. Mm-hmm. You can have protection, and you are protected with your trade names, even without actually taking a formal step to register that brand with the Intellectual Property Office. So you'd be protected by something called passing off, which is where a business tries to copy your unregistered brand, the get-up of your business.
Yes.
It's a lot easier to protect those brands if you actually take the formal step to register the trademark, though. And whether that is the name, let's say Big Bang Limited, something along those lines. And that might be a business name for somebody that sells plumbing supplies. So it's a unique brand that doesn't describe what's actually been sold. That would potentially be a registrable mark. And you can do that by following a relatively straightforward procedure, filling out a few forms and getting that registered mark. Obviously, it's a very simplified way of putting it, but it's not that complicated to actually go down that process. The complicated bit is the brand clearance searching and working out whether the mark is actually registrable in the first place. And that's where an expert, whether it's a trademark attorney or a solicitor, can actually come in and save you a lot of time and heartache if you go down the steps and get it rejected at the last minute. From a cost point of view, it's not as expensive as people might think. To trademark a very basic name in one class, you could be talking about registration fees of about £125, which are the filing fees, and then your expert's fees, which, depending on the firm, won't be as eye-watering as people think. But it does depend on the individual mark, of course.
Okay. So that's really interesting. You've talked about a couple of things there. So going online and filing an application, mm-hmm. but also you've talked about brand clearance as well. And that's where things can people can particularly benefit from bringing an expert in. Mm-hmm. Brand clearance, what does that mean?
That's a good question. Yeah, okay. So, I mean, that is very much just working out that your brand is unique. There's no one out there that has the same brand by complete coincidence. There's a lot of businesses in the world and there's a lot of business in the UK. And it's simply carrying out relevant searches to make sure that your mark isn't going to infringe anyone else's rights, but also that you may have the first mark. You may have that right to register, but it's working out whether or not anyone might actually object and what grounds they may object on. For example, if they were trading first with the same name or if they've set up recently. And it's about nipping it in the bud and trying to get in there and maybe have the conversation with that brand, see how serious they are, or just put the application through if you're feeling confident and get ready to deal with that opposition. But it's about planning, and it may be cheaper, of course, to change your brand. If you're a new startup, for example, and you've not really invested any time and money into the brand, it may be a lot easier to just have a quick rebrand, think about it, obviously, and move forwards with that. Or you can plan to deal with any potential oppositions that may come forward in the future. So that can be searches like the existing registers, the trademark registers.
Yes.
Google searches, very relevant now, or whatever search engine you choose to use. and really, it's about just doing your research. Yeah. But in reality, good marketeers should be doing that anyway before you get to the registering stage to work out that you've got a unique and saleable brand.
Yes, quite. I mean, you should be doing that when you're coming up with your brand, when you're coming up with, say, a company. company logo or product names, company name or whatever. Now, right at the start, you mentioned passing off, which is interesting. But also, I found that it's something that a lot of people don't necessarily fully understand.
No.
You know, people know that there is something called passing off, but how does that actually apply? And perhaps you could explain what is meant by passing off, and what a company should do if they feel that someone is doing this to their brand, to their name.
Yeah. Well, as I say, passing off is generally used as a term when we're talking about protecting unregistered marks.
Yeah.
Although it can also be the get-up of the business. So, for example, a website and the layout of the website, and it's so easy these days to just sort of copy someone else's.
Yes.
They may not use your exact brand name, they may not use your exact logo, but the overall feel of it could look very, very similar, you know. And it's about protecting that, the get-up of the business, the overall appearance of it. And within that comes unregistered trademarks, unregistered logos, brand names, that sort of thing. We also use it if you may have a registered trademark, but this is also another action that we can use to protect everything else. It's an action that's brought in court, whether it's the High Court or whether it's the Intellectual Property and Enterprise Court, which is a relatively new sort of court, which is becoming more popular now. It's fairly specialist. Not many firms will be using it yet, but it is developing and it's growing, and there's more and more out there that are getting to grips with it now. From an individual point of view, though, again, it's about doing your research and keeping up to speed with who else is out there, who else is trading. Regular searches online of your brand name, see who else is coming up in the searches. Are they using your domain name and your meta tags in order to sort of bump themselves up the ratings? And if they are, there may well be a claim that you could bring there, whether it's for damages or an injunction to prevent them from doing that in the future.
Now, because that's a really interesting one, because the rise of digital marketing has actually opened up new areas in which people are trying to piggyback on top of other brands.
Yeah, yeah.
So famously, of course, some people use pay-per-click advertising on Google. As you said, other search engines are available. But some brands have got into trouble by advertising their name against somebody else's.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so that their ads appear when you're looking for, say, if you're looking for one particular florist and somebody else's ads have appeared.
Yeah, the florist is a really good example. Yeah. There was a very famous case a few years ago now. But that really set the benchmark. And it is about piggybacking off other people's success at the end of the day. And that is classic passing off, where you're ultimately using someone else's brand, either as paid ads or in the background of your coding on your website, to bump you up the rating. So if I go and search, a certain brand of florist, and I want to find that brand of florist, whether it's M&S or Interflora, whoever it happens to be, and I get the other one. Why? That's going to confuse me as a consumer as to why I'm getting that one. Are they related? Are they part of the same company? And it's that confusion that ultimately you can use passing off to clear up. And that's why it's in the public interest to have that right of action.
Yes, absolutely. Okay. Now, that's really interesting. I also want to talk about something that applies to perhaps lots of solo entrepreneurs as well, small businesses and people selling their services rather than a product. And their name is one thing, but their actual copy, because a few people have said to me, I'm a designer, for example. Someone told me he's a graphic designer, and he has carefully crafted his three or four paragraphs of text on his About Me section of his website about his expertise, but also about his particular philosophy in terms of graphic design. That's selling his services to his potential clients. And then he found a different designer in America, funnily enough, had essentially copied the text that he wrote himself and was using it to promote their design business. Now, is he protected? Is there anything he can do? Or if your words are part of your branding, but your original words that you've written about yourself, and someone else has, if you like, nicked them or borrowed them to try and sell themselves, can a small business do something about that?
Yes, and I suppose yes and no is always the answer, isn't it? Yes, in as much as, let's go back to what you were saying about a few paragraphs of text on a website. That would be protected by copyright law.
Yeah.
When you generate that text, as soon as you put that down, that is protected by copyright. You have the copyright in that, as long as it's an original work, a literary work, whether it's on a website or on a page of a book or however it's generated, that's protected by copyright. Whether you can enforce that copyright is a much more complicated answer. You have to prove that you were the first and you were the creator of that text. So the old traditional way of doing it, for example, if you wrote a book, would be to pop it in a self-sealed, self-addressed envelope, post it to yourself and leave it sealed in a cupboard until that day when you think someone's infringed your rights and you open it up in court and say, this is mine, this is the original work and it's got a date on the envelope. It's never been opened, so this proves that I was the originator of that work. And it's very much the same with websites. It's a lot easier to copy them, of course, with a quick click and right click and off you go and you're done. But ultimately, you can still take steps to prove when you created that original text, whether that's saving dated copies on your own hard drive, whether it's printing off hard copies that are date stamped at the bottom. It's important to take those steps. And that's how you can record. And the more evidence you have, and the more copies of what you've done that you keep in as well ordered as you can do, the better evidence you'll have to bring that enforcement action in the future if you need to. And it may well be that a few well-worded letters from either the individual business or their lawyers will actually get the infringing party to take it down. You know, they've been caught red-handed. Ooh, okay, they'll change it because it's cheaper than going to court. Mm. If, however, they stick their feet in the ground, then, you know, and they refuse to take it down for any reason, then court action is the way forward. And that can be pricey. There's no getting around that, unfortunately, but it's therefore important to try and get as much evidence as you can about the creation of it and the fact that it's yours in the first place, using things like the little C logo there with the date on there showing that it was when it was created by you and when it was last updated by you, just to show the world that you do consider that there's copyrightable material there.
Quite, yes.
And and as I say, hopefully don't know how to phrase it, good lawyers will be able to avoid having to go to court and get some sort of pre-action settlement and get the other side to take it down, because you can build that case, put it in a letter of claim, and hopefully sort of worry them enough to make them regret their actions, take it down, and hopefully pay your costs. But that very much depends on the individual case.
Quite. Okay, so this is really interesting. We've moved into enforcement, if you like, whether it's at the point of view of in the courts, or whether it's how you actually take action and get someone to remove something that they have borrowed, let's say, or stolen from you. And enforcement is perhaps another area which is frequently misunderstood in terms of how to go about taking action, how to go about protecting yourself is one thing that we've covered at the start, but how to then go about taking action. And as you say, a good lawyer can get things done for you. If it goes to court, what are the jurisdictions here? What courts apply? You know, where will people find themselves with their lawyers taking action if somebody has infringed their copyright or their logo or a passing off situation?
Yeah, well, that's a good question for this time on a Friday morning. So, jurisdiction is complicated, actually, and it can be complicated, particularly, for example, using your story of someone who's been infringed in a different jurisdiction, potentially over in the States, for example. Yeah. We would always try and make sure that the relevant jurisdiction is England and Wales. And we would try and obviously make sure that we can bring that claim here, which, generally speaking, you would be able to. Again, it's broadly speaking. In terms of the relevant court, well, there's various options. Ultimately, now for intellectual property, there is a specific court that deals with that, the Intellectual Property and Enterprise Court. And generally speaking, there's two tracks on there that are relevant to most people. small claims track, which is pretty accessible in the same way as the small claims track is for normal civil claims, whether it's debt recovery, which Stacey will talk about in a minute, or whether it's boundary disputes, or you know, somebody owing somebody money for a car, a dodgy motor, something like that. Or there's the main sort of beefier track where costs come into play and the winner gets paid by the loser, hopefully, and that sort of thing. Small claims is more accessible. There's no costs involved, or rather there's no cost recovery involved, I should say. So the loser doesn't pay the winner's costs. So you know what you're going to expend, hopefully, in advance of actually taking that action to a greater degree than if you embark on the sort of full fat court, if you like, where it can be very complicated, convoluted, and a lot longer process.
I see. Okay.
It generally depends on how much damages you'd be looking to obtain. If you're not bothered about the money, if you just want an injunction to prevent somebody from copying your stuff or using your trademark, then small claims is a good way to go because it can be quite a quick and efficient and cost-effective way of getting that important injunction and making that infringer stop doing what they're doing.
Right. Excellent. So... the small claims court process can make things happen for you there.
Yeah, it's still a court.
Yeah, it is still a court. That's a key message. So you need to be appropriately prepared for
Absolutely, yeah. It's very easy to not bother, you know, to think, oh, well, I'll just bowl up on the day and just have it out in front of a judge. And people do that.
Do they? Yeah.
And sometimes it works, of course it does, but it all comes down to the judge on the day. And the best way of preparing is obviously to make sure that you have the strongest case set out neatly and appropriately, and that you've considered all the potential options and pitfalls that go with that.
Excellent, yeah.
I suppose that's where lawyers come in, isn't it?
And that's where lawyers come in. And we've talked about court action, we've talked about the small claims court, and I think it's probably a good time to pivot to Stacey's area of expertise here, because a small claims court is where some people end up when they're chasing debts and trying to get paid by people who owe them money. But that's hopefully a last resort in many ways. It's better to get the money in before having to go to court, I imagine.
That's right, yes, certainly.
Yeah. So I've asked you to talk about how perhaps to avoid bad debt in the first place, what to do if you are suffering. And it's something that every business, and I expect including solicitors who know all about best practice, has suffered from. But what do you advise clients to do in terms of how to avoid bad debt?
That's right. Well, debt recovery is one of the areas that we focus on and we look at. And by the time our clients come through to us, it's generally got to quite a late stage. But the theme that tends to run through the vast majority of the inquiries and the cases that we deal with is that businesses haven't taken the appropriate steps at the very start of the business relationship to protect themselves. And they realise that the late stage, and hindsight's always a wonderful thing in these instances, but they realise that there have been failings and they could have done things better. And by doing things better, that is having good sets of terms and conditions. They don't have to be a big, epic, massive, thick document, but they just need to have the basics in there to make sure that there's an understanding when you start that business relationship, what is expected of the parties and what the parties are going to comply with, what the payment terms are going to be, when the money's going to be due, whether there's going to be costs paid up front, whether there's going to be a balance on delivery. A wide range of things that can be covered, but that tends to be one of the things that's always the missing ingredient, that businesses have gone into a relationship, they've delivered the service, they provided the goods, and then suddenly realised, ooh, the money, the bit that really, you know, that really we all do this for, that we want to get paid, and realising it's not happening in the way that they thought. And then you've got a situation where sometimes there's a friendship that's evolved in the relationship and people are thinking, oh, but they've been really good to me and, oh, I don't want to ask. And you've really got to, from the very outset, go into it with a very professional and clear frame of mind that, yes, we might have been great friends and we've got on really well in the course of this relationship, but ultimately it's a business transaction. We want to be paid. We want to be paid on time and we want to do business together.
Quite. So it's really useful stuff there. You've talked about getting things right from the outset, proper planning, setting up clear expectations as well.
Absolutely.
What's being delivered, when people are going to be invoiced and how, payment terms and what they are. And as you said as well, Stacey, you know, sometimes things are easy with the benefit of hindsight, mm-hmm. but plan this right at the outset and
that's
get
right.
it right, which of course is what we were talking about earlier. When it comes to protecting your brand and your intellectual property, plan appropriately. Same comes in terms of doing business with
absolutely
people.
Yes.
You also mentioned that sometimes people become friends, and you might have started off on a great footing where you've been always paid on time, but people have become friends, and mm-hmm. gradually things have slipped, and
that's right.
You've let it happen, and now they owe you money. Now that's a bad position to be in. What should people do if everything started off well, but they're finding now that they're not being paid on time? How do they reel it back?
Again, it's about being proactive in these things. If yeah. you sit back and you suddenly start to think, oh, this is not going right, it'll be okay, it'll come back good again. Unfortunately, these things don't come back good again. You've got to be really proactive and make sure that you keep your eye on what is going on, and when you realise that things, you're not going to get paid as you thought you were, is taking that action then, and either getting involved with lawyers, or whether you take this into your own hands with your own credit, internal credit control, but making sure really that you don't sit back on it, and if needs be, you have to go through a court system.
Yes, indeed. Now, if it goes to the court, sometimes people think, OK, it's small claims, if it's up to a certain level anyway, and that will be easy. I'll fill in a form online and I'll turn up and then I'll get paid. And again, we were talking with Ben earlier about people's expectations or assumptions about the small claims system might sometimes be wrong.
That's right.
When it comes to court action then for a small debt up to the small claims level, and perhaps you can remind us what mm-hmm. that is as well, how does it work?
Okay, well, a small claim is anything up to £10,000. Now, £10,000 to a business, in my view, to a small business, is not a small claim.
Indeed.
It certainly isn't a small amount of money, but that's what the limit is. So anything up to £10,000. Now, with the small claims, you can go through the more traditional method by starting your claim on paper, submitting it to the court. The court then issues the papers. It's then served on the opponent, and it goes that way. There's also, for debt recovery, there's a money claims online, and that permits the court papers to be issued via an online portal system. It's administered through Ministry of Justice. It's a proper official website. It's secure login and everything, but it's still a court process. However you start it, whether you start it in the way of the traditional on with the papers, or you do the money claims online, it is still an official court process that will result eventually, if a settlement cannot be agreed, in a hearing, and that hearing has to be prepared for, and that hearing you have to have evidence. Ben touched on that in what he talked about with trademarking. Courts like evidence, so you need to have a good clear paper trail of what that debt is, with invoices, what it is you're recovering, if there's a contract, how that contract has occurred and how it's been breached. You've got to have all this information, and you do have to submit witness evidence. You will need somebody from your business to go along to that hearing to give oral evidence. The courts really don't deal with these things on paper. You can, but it by having a case dealt with on paper, the person who doesn't turn up invariably is the party that's on the losing end.
Right.
So you need to be there, and you need to prepare. And that can be very, very time consuming for businesses. And that is, to some extent, a misconception about small claims, because people generally, in my experience, tend to think, oh, well, it's small claims. I'll just put the claim in. It'll all work out. And as Ben said, well, we'll have our day before the judge and that'll be it. Well, that's a very simplistic way of looking at it. In practice, as a lot of time and effort goes into it, and it can also, if you're dealing with it yourself, it can become quite emotive.
Yes,
because
indeed.
When you've submitted your claim, the other party will then have the opportunity to respond to that claim and defend it. And when the defence comes through and you see what the defendant is saying, it can be very easy to see, oh, you know, that I can't believe they've said that, and oh, I can't, that didn't happen, and oh, that's not how it was meant to be. And very quickly relations can deteriorate, and the whole process can therefore turn out to be quite a stressful and lengthy process.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, emotionally draining, particularly absolutely. For owner-managed businesses yeah. as well, where it feels really personal.
That's
someone,
right, and it takes yeah. away the resource of the person within the business because they have to spend the time dealing with the court papers and the court action. And for all the will in the world, you know, it's going to take time to get that through and to get that completed to give you the best chance of being successful.
Yes, and to do that correctly. So if you're trying to do it yourself to save money because someone owes you money and you think it's going to be easy, but then you're not managing or running your business or earning fees if you're a fee earner
exactly.
or if you're selling your personal services or running a business, you know, selling your professional expertise or running a business. So it is worth doing this properly.
Absolutely.
And
if you're going to embark on any court proceedings, whether you're starting them off through the money claims online or you're starting them off in the more traditional way with submitting paperwork, it's essential that you lay the foundations, you do the work properly, and you prepare.
Yes, quite. So that preparation and support in terms of professional expertise, which could obviously come from someone like yourself, Stacey, and obviously we should say that other expertise is available, but a good paying for good quality expertise needn't be ridiculously expensive.
No, not at all. And with small claims, there's lots of firms, ourselves included, we will happily see clients, and we can give standalone advice contained to 1 or 2 hours to give you understanding, answer questions about the process, what's going to happen, what do you need to do, what might be the best way of approaching it, or we can deal with the whole process from start to finish. What option is best really depends on how much you're looking to recover. If you're at the lower end, it might just be that standalone advice is required. If you're at the upper end of the limit, towards the £10,000, then it's much more commercial to have a professional dealing with it for you. So there's a lot of choice out there. It isn't a case of if you come to see a solicitor, you have to engage that solicitor to deal with beginning to end. We can talk through your needs, what's going to be the best for you, what options do you want to do, what do you feel capable that you can do, where do you feel you need the support, and we can work with you in making sure that you get that.
Excellent. Well, that perhaps can be a point that will reassure people that there is expertise available and that they can recover what they are owed. And you're going to be talking about this in a session that's on next week. I understand the firm is involved with an event, part of the Sheffield City Region's Growth Hub project. We've talked about SCR events quite a lot on this programme and signposted events to people and disputes and actually avoiding bad debt in the first place. But what to do if you're in this position is one of several areas that you're covering at the event that's on next week. I think you're also covering employment law, shareholder agreements and commercial property as well in the event, as I understand. Now, Stacey, Ben, are you both going along to that event?
I'm not taking part in that event. No, Ben is, and a couple of other our colleagues from the firm, they're involved.
Yeah, I'll have two hats on that day. We're talking about intellectual property again, and so giving a bit of an overview of
Excellent.
How developing businesses, rather than startups, but those that are growing at varying rates can help protect their IP and be aware of what IP they've got. But also I'll have my debt recovery hat on and credit control hat as well, because I'm a litigator whilst not doing intellectual property.
Super.
And I'll be talking about that. And then, we'll have John Senior talking property. We'll have John Curtis dealing with employment and Anna Cati dealing with all things corporate and commercial and contracts.
Great. And this is called the Legal Foundations Masterclass, Building for the Future. It's on next Wednesday, I understand.
That's right. Yeah. I think it's at 1 o'clock till 4:30. So it's a decent session. There'll be a good chance to get some networking done at the same time as hopefully learning a thing or two. It's a free event.
Yeah.
And I think there's still places available if people want to log on to the website and find out how they can register for it.
Super. So that is scrgrowthhub.co.uk/masterclasses. I will tweet the link out so that listeners can find details of how to book and so on. Now, Whilst we're talking websites, of course, there is plenty of useful material and information on the actual Ironmonger Curtis website. So listeners can actually put faces to names.
if they want to.
If you would like to.
I think I've probably got a face for radio.
Oh, don't be so mean to yourself. But you also have a legal answers section on the Ironmonger Curtis website as well. Yeah. So do you want to give out the website address, Ben?
It's a nice, easy one to remember. It's just www.ironmongercurtis.com. We've just had a new website, actually, so it's been updated. So it will be changing quite a lot over the next few weeks as more content gets added, but there's certainly a fair amount on there to start with and get your teeth into.
Great stuff. So plenty there, plenty as you say, to get your teeth stuck into, and an opportunity to come and meet with you, Ben, next week as well, and colleagues at the Laying the Legal Foundations Masterclass, which is a free event, and that's on next Wednesday. So super. Well, that's been really helpful, really interesting as well. And I can remember when I ran a magazine publishing company, and I set up a magazine with a couple of colleagues. We left a large publishing company to set up our own magazine, and a specialist magazine in the area of economic development, regeneration and social enterprise. And we launched it in 1999, and I think in 2008 I received through the post a copy of a brand new magazine, and it was called New Start. And our magazine, that had been going for 9 years by that point, was called New Start. Oh. And I opened this magazine, which was aimed at business owners in Scotland. And there was a wonderful article in it all about how to choose your company name. And they'd written, when you're choosing the name of your new company, Google to make sure that there isn't a business already called that. And I was thinking, well, you haven't taken your own advice
here. No, indeed.
You've set up a magazine called New Start. Our magazine that has been going for 9 years is called New Start. And they were even trying to sell subscriptions to their magazine in Scotland, actually, not the whole of the UK, but to the similar kind of audience as ours. And I can remember trying to sort of unpack what to do about it at the time. And it's an issue as well that sole traders, small businesses have to grapple with, whether it's copyright, but whether it's actually then enforcing things, and the issue of debt as well, and protecting yourself from even being in the position and getting things right from the outset, setting clear expectations for payment terms, and remembering it's a business transaction. You're not bankrolling your suppliers or your customers even. Is absolutely vital. So some really helpful advice there from Stacey and from Ben, and thank you so much for joining me on the programme today.
Thanks for having us.
You've been listening to Business Live, Sheffield Live's weekly business and social enterprise programme, with me, Jamie Veitch. And in the studio today, we've been talking about protecting your intellectual property and about protecting yourself from bad debt. We've had Stacey and Ben from Ironmonger Curtis in the studio with us. Now, we're going to take a quick break for a track of music. This is Stereo MC's Connected.
This is Sheffield Live.
We're open for business live.
This is Business Live, Sheffield Live's weekly business and social enterprise programme, with me, Jamie Veitch. We've been talking today about protecting your intellectual property and about debt recovery, and not even getting into a position where people owe you money. Stacey and Ben from law firm Ironmonger Curtis have been on the show today. If you've only just tuned in and you've missed their tips, then don't panic, because the podcast of today's programme will be up on the Sheffield Live website from about 11 a.m. today. All you need to do is go to sheffieldlive.org, find radio shows, look up Business Live, and the show from today, the 3rd of November, will be there. Talking about podcasts, last week's programme featured skills development and taking a proactive approach to your workforce. It featured an international social enterprise working with NGOs across the world to support aid workers, and it featured Social Enterprise UK's Deputy Chief Executive talking about the Social Value Act and procurement and commissioning and how social enterprises can win more contracts. Podcast of the Friday the 27th of October programme is there too, of course. And whilst you're there, you can explore a whole wealth of exciting music and much, much more on the Sheffield Live website podcast section. Plenty of variety and diversity to enjoy. What else has been going on this week? Well, of course, an interest rate rise. The Bank of England announced, took the decision to raise interest rates from 0.25% to 0.5% yesterday. Rates have been at a historic low for a very long time. This was the first rise in over a decade. It's probable that this signals the beginning of the end of ultra-low interest rates because the bank hinted that there would be a couple more interest rate rises to come in the next 2 or 3 years. So how will that affect you? From a personal level, if you're a mortgage holder or a saver, and from a business point of view too. What's your view? You can get in touch with us. You can tell us what you think about the rate rise. You can contact us by emailing jamie@sheffieldlive.org. Send a text to 07 904 272 200. Find me, Jamie Veitch, on Twitter. Find Sheffield Live on Twitter as well. We're always interested in hearing from you. The average UK personal debt is now £8,000 per person, not including the mortgage, according to a new survey, which also revealed that 6 million Britons fear never being debt-free, and 25% struggle to make ends meet. This is research for comparethemarket.com. They're a price comparison website. They asked 2,000 adults detailed questions about their personal finances. They found that 10% of people had maxed out on a credit card, and a similar number said they'd been overdrawn during the past 12 months. Those results chime with the Financial Conduct Authority's recent survey, which I talked about on the show a couple of weeks ago. The Financial Conduct Authority found that half of UK adults are financially vulnerable. This was their Financial Lives survey of 13,000 consumers, which attempted to assess how many individuals are facing financial harm. That painted a picture of debt and credit problems across the UK. And some people have speculated that economic recovery in the UK, measured by consumption, has been driven by debt. Again, what's your view on this? We're always interested in hearing from you. You can get in touch with the programme and comment, and I've given out the details for you to do so. What's coming up? Well, next week it's a Made Entrepreneurship Festival returning to Sheffield next week on the 9th of November. Meaningful, practical advice and inspiration from experts and peers, according to the organisers. You can go along, take a look at madefestival.com to see details of the programme. Speakers include Simon Biltcliffe, the Marxist capitalist. He says Marxism and capitalism together are unbeatable. Ruth Nikaosh, she's going to speak about McLaren's journey so far and how she's shaping the future strategy of McLaren Automotive. And Saha Hashemi, she founded Coffee Republic and is the co-chair of the Scale Up task force. She's going to talk about her story. Much, much more on at the Made Festival. Full details on madefestival.com to find out more and book your place. Go along. There's also an after show party at 5 o'clock with free drink, free food, and entertainment as well. Full details on the Made Festival website, madefestival.com. If you're going along, hope you enjoy it. Hope you find it helpful. Also on next week, there is a legal advice clinic, which we have talked about earlier on today, and that's on the 8th. And I will tweet the link out to that once again. That's organised by the Sheffield City Region. And our guest today, Ben from Ironmonger Curtis, he is one of the team delivering that advice. It's a free event to go along to. So that's it for today, but we'll be back on air next Friday. Thanks so much for listening. Thanks to our guests Stacey and Ben from Ironmonger Curtis, and thanks to Sangeeta in the studio as our sound engineer today. Don't go away now, because next up on Sheffield Live is our fantastic folk music programme. Thank goodness it's folk, from 10 all the way through to noon. So stay tuned for that and enjoy the programme. We'll be back on air next Friday. Thanks again for listening. We'll play out with a bit more of the Stereo MCs. This is Pressure.
This is Sheffield Live.
We're open for business live.